This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, in the car. Did you know that over half of the people who listen to Joy are allies of the LGBTIQ plus community, just like you? So you may not be aware, but times are really tough financially at Joy, and we're reaching out for your support. So tell your siblings, your workmates, heck, even wind down your window and tell someone else stuck in the traffic to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
This is Saturday Magazine.
You're listening to Saturday Magazine with Macca and Tass here on Joy 94.9. We are now looking at the next guest we can have here on Joy 94.9, which is going to be Michael O'Brien.
Good morning, Michael.
Macca, great, you're on air.
I am sorry. I was just sending an email. Someone wanted words of my editorial, so I'm sorry about that. I was just emailing. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, I'm a bit fired up. I'm looking to you to calm me down.
You can fire up.
You can go for it. I tell you what,
Mac has just delivered his weekly op-ed, and he focused on a minister called Stuart Roberts, who's a federal minister, and he's decided to rename him as Minister Gigabyte Download. There you go.
I probably don't want to know the reason why, do I?
All I can say, Michael, is just be careful because he might name you something that you may not like.
No.
Now, how are you this morning?
I'm very well. We've done a press conference. We've announced our position on Belt and Road, which is a lot of people are talking about at the moment. So very happy to talk about that. We've put some positive ideas out there that we're hoping Andrews takes up to get the economy back. So yeah, a lot of good things happen.
Okay, tell us your position on Belt and Road. What is it?
Yeah.
Look, our view is that we don't support the agreement. It's a bad deal for Victoria. At the end of the day, it doesn't support our jobs, it doesn't support our security, and doesn't support our sovereignty. So I've announced that if I'm Premier in 2022, I will end the deal. I've got no problem trading with China or any other country for that matter, but this is a lopsided deal. Under it, you've got Chinese government-owned companies. So not just Chinese companies, Chinese government-owned companies building our major projects. They're building the West Gate Tunnel. They're building the Metro Tunnel. They're doing level crossing removals. What's the Chinese government done for us? Well, they've hit our farmers with an 80% tariff on barley. So this is just a bad deal. We're getting smashed both ways, and I'm not interested in sticking with a deal that's not working for us, so I will pull us out if I'm Premier.
So can you explain for our listeners this morning how it's a bad deal?
Well, okay, because it's a bad deal because it is lopsided. When you actually look at the text of the agreements that Premier Andrews has signed with the Chinese government, for example, on infrastructure. It requires, it provides, and I'll quote it so I can't be accused of making it up, quote, it commits Victoria to increasing the participation of Chinese infrastructure companies in Victoria's infrastructure construction program. Okay, so that's what we're offering them. What is the Chinese government offering us? They say, promoting Victorian firms in China. How is that a fair deal? We're saying we'll increase their participation in building our projects, and they're simply offering us a bit of an introduction around China. It's a lopsided deal, and it's not protecting Victorian jobs. Daniel Andrews said, look, this is about protecting Victorian jobs. If it's so good, why have our farmers just been smashed by an 80% tax, an 80% tariff that the Chinese government has put on Australian barley? They didn't exclude Victoria. They didn't say, Daniel Andrews has got the Belt and Road deal, we'll let Victorian farmers off. No, our farmers have copped it in the neck. So this is a bad deal for us. It was signed up without proper security advice. The federal government and the federal opposition, Anthony Albanese, you said he wouldn't touch Belt and Road with a barge pole. Daniel Andrews has gone out by himself. He's the only state premier or federal leader to agree to it. It's a bad deal, and I think people want a choice, and I'm giving them a clear choice. If you're not comfortable with Daniel Andrews signing us up to the Chinese government's Belt and Road deal, you vote to make Michael O'Brien Premier, and I will end it.
Michael, it's Macca. Look, I want to know what's in the deal, and we know that we actually don't know much, if any, of the detail of it, do we?
Well, there are two signed memorandums of understanding, which and that they are, they're released, and well, and that's why I've been able to go through those.
Okay.
What we don't know, what yes, they have, yeah, and I've they're on. I've got a, there's a website, abettervic.com. And you can, that's a Liberal Party website, and you can actually look at the details there, because we want people to see what's in these deals, because they're not good. They're not good. Daniel Andrews has been very secretive about it. We've been able to track down what's actually in them. What we don't know, though, Macca, is what sits around it. Yeah, what private commitments have been given around these deals. Now, Daniel Andrews is just borrowing $25 billion in extra debt, he says, in response to the COVID-19. His ministers were asked, will you rule out getting that money from China? And the answer is no. So we don't know if he's planning to borrow this money from China, what the conditions would be. And this is where sovereignty issues come in. We need to be in control of our own destiny as much as possible. And I really don't like the idea of Daniel Andrews having secret little deals, potentially, because he hasn't ruled them out, with a foreign country. That could impact on our ability to control our own industry.
One of our listeners, Peter from South Yarra, asks you, what are the financial consequences if we break the agreement?
Well, the agreements themselves, the ones that have been signed, actually provide for parties to be able to withdraw. So it's not like the East-West Link contract where it cost over $1 billion when Daniel Andrews ripped that up. This agreement actually provides for it to be ended by a party giving 3 months' notice. So I'm being really upfront with Victorians and with China, for that matter. I'm saying, if I'm Premier after the next election, first thing I'll do is give them 3 months' notice and we'll be out.
Like a reasonable agreement to have been struck that actually doesn't have financial consequences.
Well, there's no financial consequences, Tass, in this agreement. But as I say, what we don't know is what separate deals in terms of borrowing or debt or specific projects has Daniel Andrews entered into, or will he enter into? Now, he's talking about another agreement that's in the pipeline. We don't know about it. He's never taken it to Parliament, never taken it to the people, for that matter. So I'm just concerned that there's so much secrecy around this whole Belt and Road initiative. And we know from other countries, it hasn't worked out well for a lot of other countries. Sri Lanka used Chinese money to build a port, and the terms were so onerous that, in fact, the Chinese government took control of the port. So the Chinese government now operates a port in a foreign country. So they can send their warships.
A deep water port.
I don't want that happening.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I don't want that happening here. I don't like the idea that Victoria should be beholden to any other country. It's not even about China. We shouldn't be beholden to any other country. If we need to borrow money, we should do it on the international money markets, do it at the best price possible. Don't put all our eggs in one basket, because that gives us very little room to move.
I think one of the things about this, Michael, look, I hope you're sitting down, because I'm pretty much agreeing with you.
My goodness, sorry, I'm just looking at the calendar to make sure it's not the 1st of April.
That's all right, give yourself a bit of a slap. But the thing that, you know, a lot of the detail, we don't know, you know, what is the real intricate detail here? But what we do know is that China's behaviour of late as the regional bully, and in terms of using the economic levers to actually, you know, force their view on people. One of the challenges there is we see what's happening in Hong Kong, Michael. You know, the Chinese government made an agreement about one country, two systems, right? Now, what they're doing is they're basically ignoring that. They've torn that up. They're not interested in democracy. They're not interested in engagement with the people of Hong Kong. What's to say that the Belt and Road Initiative, okay, it's not a binding contract, my understanding, but what's to say they just don't ignore that? We need, I think, as a state and as a country, we're going to have to reassess our relationship with China. We've got a message here from a rural listener. He said, I hate to say this, that the 80% tariff is because we subsidise farmers. Well, actually, I don't think that is necessarily the case, and that's from a member. I don't think we subsidise our barley farmers, but the relationship we have with China is really important economically, but it's the message that it sends about democracy, about engagement, and about respect for human rights. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, Tez, Macca, I'm a great believer in trade where it's mutually beneficial. And you know, you can trade just about anything, but you can't trade your values.
Yeah.
And we have to retain the ability to stand up and call out things as a state or as a country that we see that are wrong. And I don't want to see a situation where Victoria, or indeed Australia, is so indebted, so under the influence of another country, that we're too scared to stand up and call out bad behaviour when we see it.
Yeah.
And when you look at Hong Kong, you know, the agreement was quite clear that I think it was to 2047.
Yes.
One country, two systems, autonomy. You're right, that's been ripped up. You know, now if you criticise the Chinese government, Chinese national anthem or flags, 3 years jail. That's not democracy. That's not respecting the Hong Kong system. So we've got to be able to say that, and as a political leader, I want to be able to say that without worrying at the back of my mind
about economic consequences. Yeah.
How much do we owe to China? Exactly. Mm. Exactly right. So it's really about making sure that our interests are spread, I suppose. We shouldn't be putting all our eggs in one basket. Now, we sell as much to China as they sell to us. So unlike perhaps the bigger mining states, with Victoria, the economic relationship is a little bit more balanced. But what I'm concerned about is that Daniel Andrews' Belt and Road deal will make it very unbalanced, and we will be in a position where China could have significant ramifications on our way of life and our economy if we are too dependent on them. And I think it's the Hong Kong example, which you mentioned, Macca, shows. It's never sensible to put all your trust in another country to act in your interest, because they will always act in what they see as being their interest.
Yeah. I have a name for it. It's a deal that they're belting us with, and they're sending us down a road to nowhere. Anyway, I
might have to pinch that.
Yeah, you can use that. You can have it for free.
Thank you.
Now I'm going to upset you, because I'm going to ask you a question that, as you know, I speak to, your colleagues, when mm-hmm. I can. When they take my call, they don't always want to talk to me. I don't know why. But, look, a couple of them have expressed some concern about some of the Twitter comments by Tim Smith. And I don't have a problem with criticising policy. Politics is partisan. But I see some of the things that Tim's been saying is actually quite, I call it bullying in a way, but there are people that are really impacted by some of these comments and that are offended by it. They see it as unnecessarily partisan, but also, I mean, it doesn't go down well, Michael. You know, when we had you on, a few weeks ago, and we're talking about, trying to work with the government and trying to, with the Victorian community, I've got to say, my view is some of Tim's comments and the view of some of Tim's colleagues is not very positive. And I know you've spoken to him about it, but can we please ask him to be a little bit more considered? He said, I need to do this to get noticed. Don't worry, mate, we know you're there. We know you're there. You don't need to get noticed in this way. Do you want to make a comment?
Look, Mac, I wouldn't. I'm happy to make a comment, but look, I wouldn't personalise it to Tim, because there are people in all political parties,
yep,
and including in very, very senior positions in the government. In fact, I would call out the Deputy Premier James Molino as being, who is Daniel Andrews uses as an attack dog. And when Matthew Guy was leader, James came out and even in the Parliament used terrible, terrible language to describe Matthew and to make allegations about him. And, you know, is it the part of politics that I enjoy? Absolutely not. You know, I'm in politics because I think it's about who's got the best ideas to take the state forward. Yeah, that's what gets me out of bed every morning. It's not you know, attacking people. It's attacking bad ideas that are hurting Victorians. That's the sort of attack that I'd like to focus on. But you know what? You always get this colour and movement in politics. And look, you know, people have got different styles. If everybody sounded and looked like Michael O'Brien, the world might be a bit more of a boring place. If everyone sounded and looked like Tim Smith, it would be boring. Because you know what? Being homogenous is boring, right? So we are going to have different people with different styles. I've flagged where I thought Tim had crossed the line on an occasion, and I had words with him about that. And yeah, that's no. So I would rather focus on a battle of ideas because I think that's what benefits Victorians. But there's always going to be argy bargy, and it happens on all sides.
Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9, Macca and Tass. We are speaking with Michael O'Brien, who is the member for Malvern and also the leader of the opposition, leader of the Liberal Party in Victoria. So, Michael, we wanted to now touch on, with COVID-19, the government's response. One, I'd like you to give us your opinion and your thoughts on how they've responded in an economic sense and the impact that this has had on the infection, and if you would do it any differently. What the government has done, would you do it any differently?
Sure.
Give us your critique of the government's response first.
Yeah. I think across the country, so let's not just stick to Victoria, across the country, I think governments, plural, have handled this in a public health sense very well, very well. Now, yes, there'll be some criticism at the margins. And I do think that, for example, the whole cedar meats cluster, which we saw here in Victoria, where the first outbreak happened, basically was kept silent for a number of weeks, and that allowed that person to then spread the coronavirus, and we're now up to 111 Victorians have been affected. And I think that was an absolute breakdown. And for the health minister to come out and say that it was handled absolutely perfectly, I actually thought that was a bit insulting to those Victorians who've been infected as a result. So we've got lessons to learn. I do think that our lockdown restrictions have been harsher than other states. And I have to say unnecessarily harsh in some ways. In some ways, not in every way, but in some ways. You know, we've seen kids being fined for going on driving lessons with their mum. I mean, for goodness sake, if it's safe to sort of sit next to mum at the dinner table, or it's safe to sit next to mum on the couch and watch the TV, why isn't it safe to sit next to mum in a car and practice your driving on a quiet road? I just think there's been a bit of overreach there. But I'm really focused on how do we get the state back. The economic impact of this coronavirus and the restrictions that have responded to it has been enormous. Victoria lost 127,000 jobs last month. That doesn't include the people who've lost incomes through having their hours cut, and it doesn't include the hundreds of thousands of people on the federal JobKeeper payment. So 127,000 jobs just lost. And I'm really worried that there are a lot of particularly small businesses that may not restart if we can't find a way to get this state back to work and back in business. So My colleagues and I have actually come up with some positive ideas, and we're not sort of saying we're going to wait for the next election. We've actually put them on the table now. We're saying to Daniel Andrews, we've actually come up with some concepts that we think can get this state going again, and we invite you to take them up. I think, you know, the national cabinet approach worked well. I think the community likes seeing political leaders from different parties coming together and doing their best to try and get us through that. So it's almost in that same spirit.
Michael, the reality is that the Andrews government hasn't actually received a lot of criticism. I mean, you're quite right. It has actually made some pretty tough decisions, and some of the restrictions have been much harsher. But there hasn't been like a real public outcry. Around the edges a little bit, yes. So, I mean, my question to you is, what's actually worked well?
Look, I think Victorians have responded well.
Yes.
I think that that you know, we have done what we've been asked to do by and large. I do think that there's been a bit of overzealousness in some of the rules, and you know, the fact that Victorians have been fined, I think it was four times more than New South Wales, says that there's been a little bit more bureaucracy and overreach than was necessary. I think educating people rather than just slapping them with a fine. I mean, unless it's stupid or obvious, you know, I'd rather teach people than sort of fine them in this sort of situation. But look, by and large, we've done well from a health point of view. There's no doubt about that. You know, that's something to be celebrated right across the country. I mean, I can't think of another country in the world you'd rather be in, yes, in tackling the coronavirus than here. But the question is, I'm very happy being here. But, you know, we've flattened the curve, and that's great. But we've also flattened the economy, and yeah, we have got to find a way to get businesses back, to get people back to work safely, because the consequences for the mental health, the consequences for family violence, you know, I mean, goodness me, we are looking at a real challenge. If we are looking at not just a recession but a depression, that is going to have a really significant impact on people's lives. So we're actually putting ideas out there. And if I can get in a plug, people want to see what my ideas are, you can go to my website, michaelobrien.com.au, and you can download the plan. And, you know, so we are just putting this out there in the spirit of saying we're all in this together. We need to try and get out of it together. And here are our positive ideas for how we can do that.
Well, there's one thing, Tass, he wants to say, but I just, in terms of the severity, Michael, of the lockdown, my partner works in the public health system. Tass does a lot of work in the public health system. Everyone I've spoken to has been absolutely terrified by this virus. I'm not going to argue with you about whether or not the lockdown was too severe. I don't think it was, and I think it was a bit late. And the reason that we have so few deaths is because of that lockdown. Now, I agree with you, the economic impact has been severe, and the economy will recover. People's lives have been impacted very badly. I accept that. But I'd rather be in a situation where we're trying to rebuild the economy than having a growth industry in funerals.
Macca, no disagreement from me on that at all. No disagreement. What I'd say, though, is that I think we've had restrictions which haven't made a lot of sense from a health point of view. And, I mean, look, just to give you, you know, an example, I think we're the only state in the country that banned recreational fishing. Now, you know, if you're not a fisherman, you say, well, who cares? If you do like fishing, then, you know, something which you know, you do that helps your peace of mind, it's your release from the tension of a tough, you know, tough day at work or tough day at home, to have something banned when there's no public health reason to do it.
Except, Michael, well, the truth is that it is really about keeping people from circulating in the community and keeping people at home. I mean, that's the most effective way to actually suppress transmission of the virus, is to keep people
moving. But you are
allowed
to exercise. You're allowed to ride your bike. You're allowed to go for a jog. Yeah. Now, some people don't. That's not the form of exercise they like. Other people prefer more passive forms of exercise. And, you know, so the question is, and look, we're arguing at the margins here. We're arguing at the margins because, by and large, the public health response across the country has been really, really good. But you invited me to
offer... No, please.
So I'm just saying that at the margins, I think Daniel Andrews was so interested in having a clean message that he actually went further than he needed to deliver the right public health outcomes. Because if you look around the country, it's actually Victoria which is now the problem in terms of where the new infections are coming from. We've got more new infections in Victoria than other states. So what that tells you is that all those measures, they didn't do a lot. I mean, the hospitals aren't full of people who, you know, contract your coronavirus fishing or on a golf course or anything like that, or through driving lessons. So, look, I mean, it's at the margins. I do think we went further than we needed to in some areas. But, look, by and large, you've got to say, you'd rather be in Australia than any other country in the world. And I think that Australians and Australian governments have done very well through this.
Hear, hear. And I think we might pick up some of those issues if we can get somebody from the Chief Health Officer's office in here, Macca, in the next couple of weeks, just to do a bit of a debrief.
Yeah. Now, Michael, we've got a couple of minutes left. let's again look briefly. We've asked you this before. The government, the Mental Health Royal Commission, has been extended, I think, to February next year to report back. The government's already flagged that, I'll use these words, these are my words, that it's going to be a challenge as to how we fund this. And this is before COVID-19. So we're talking about very significant amounts of money, you know, that mental health has been neglected for too long. I think everyone in the Victorian community acknowledges that. But how are we going to pay for this, Michael? Let's say it's $1 billion a year, right? How are we going to pay for it? Tell us how you would pay for it.
Well, Macca, as a former treasurer, and I handed down two budgets under Dennis Napthine as Premier, I know that budgeting is all about priorities. And you know, when you sit there and you're putting a budget together as a state treasurer, there's a million different things that you could spend money on. And your job as treasurer is to try and identify the things that are most important. And I regard mental health as being absolutely critical. When you look at all the things that governments spend money on, the governments waste money on, my starting point is, let's stop doing the things that don't work. Let's stop doing the things that waste money, and let's redirect that into things that actually matter. Now, the government has got a...
So what would you cut, Michael? What would you cut?
Yeah, what is a waste of money? Give us just one example.
Well, look at some of the budget blowouts we've had on the major projects. I mean, the Auditor General identified that the government has overshot its budget by over $3 billion on level crossing removals alone.
Well, that's a blowout, but what would you cut to actually prioritise funding mental health?
Well, Tess, the point is, if you manage projects properly, you don't have to fund the blowouts. If Daniel Andrews hadn't loaned the budget on the level crossings, there would have been an extra $3 billion in the budget to fund mental health. If he hadn't loaned the budget on the Northern Metro Tunnel, originally $9 billion, now $11 billion, now, and goodness knows where it's going to finish, there's billions of dollars there. So my starting point is, don't waste public money and spend it on things that matter. So it's not necessarily a question of cutting. It's a matter of making sure that you manage your big projects properly. Because if you get a multi-billion-dollar project wrong a little bit, the cost of that is massive, and that stops you spending money where you need to. Now, other areas where you could look at.
So what you're saying is that you'd be much more efficient, and none of your projects would actually exceed their budgets, and everything would run on time, and you'd actually make a bit of a surplus, and you can invest that money in priorities like mental health. Now, you know, is that realistic?
Well, Tess, I've got the runs on the board as a treasurer. I brought down two budgets. My projects were on time, on budget. I was able to reduce waste in the public sector. Now, you want to talk about where the government...
And meanwhile, waiting lists grow, and mental health issues grow, and so,
well,
really?
No. Well, Daniel Andrews wants to impose a new tax. He wants to put a new mental health tax on everyone. We don't know how it's going to apply yet, but that's what he says he wants to do, put a new mental health tax. Number one, do you think that making people's financial lives less secure, do you think putting more taxes on them so they worry about paying their bills, does that actually help mental health? Does that help mental health when the government's making your life harder to meet your commitments? I don't think so. We've also had mental health organisations have come out and opposed a new tax because they've said, as I say, that mental health is core government business. Yeah. Why should mental health be stigmatised by having a special tax put on it when, you know, we don't do that for health, we don't do that for hospitals, we don't do that for the police, do we? We say, no, that's core government business. Why should we have a special mental health tax? Isn't mental health at the heart of what government should be doing?
I agree. Michael, we're actually out of time. Again, I want to thank you for coming on, and also for your colleagues who are making themselves available. It's really pleasing to be able to speak to you and your colleagues, and our listeners appreciate it. They don't always agree. Someone said something quite rude about you, but I'm not going to read that out. it was probably Tim Smith.
Please tell my mum to stop calling in like that. That's not
Michael, thank you for your time again. It's always good to have you in the... on the airwaves and engaging with our community.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Enjoy the rest of your day.
Absolutely pleasure, gentlemen. Thanks very much. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.